Now, Jim, show this gentleman how you can dance and sing.
That's my attitude towards the Western powers. If you want to say there's no rules, fine. Don't go crying for your mummy when that comes.
America today finds herself in a unique situation. She's the only country in history in a position to become involved in a bloodless revolution.
If America does not respond creatively to the challenge to banish racism, some future historian will have to say that a great civilization died because it lacked the soul and commitment to make justice a reality for all men.
When a system doesn't work for the majority of the people, you gotta change the system.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, this is your brother, Byron Mandis. Welcome to this Class 4 Battlefield Podcast segment. Republicans for Biden. Republicans for Biden. At this year's DNC, the Democratic Party went through great lengths to highlight their support from neoconservative, neocon statesmen and former statesmen and, you know, strategists. And I mean, the Democratic National Convention this year was a demonstration of not partisan unity, because, you know, there's always been a partisan unification that has occurred at that level of governance. But it was more a showing of the unification of purpose that everyone had always kind of assumed. You know, everybody was on the same side, even though they claimed not to be. And this is really why I'm doing this segment. It's because I want to warn both the Democrats and the Republicans for Biden of the reality where I'm at, down here, at the deplorable level. Because I've been watching this thing slowly evolve for the last 10 plus years, and at first, I thought I was seeing glitches. I thought this was just a small passing rain shower. But it's clear that this is a prolonged storm. This is something that's going to be with us for a significant period of time into the future. And what is that something? For the Republicans who are now voting for Biden, I want y'all to understand something. You've created a monster. See, back in the 90s, people who, for some reason, were following Newt Gingrich and the billionaires that lined up behind him, you created this litmus test, which enabled you to kick out of the Republican Party and thus conservative circles those who were deemed too moderate. These were individuals who had a different understanding of the conservative principles that you espouse as being purely American and much more American than liberal principles. You created this litmus test. And for about 20 years, you still had to deal with some moderate Republicans. But after a while, moderate Republicans became a non-starter. If you were a moderate Republican, basically by the beginning of 2000, it was difficult for you to get any notoriety in the Republican Party. Now, yes, there were still moderate Republicans, but for the most part, the right wing, particularly the fascistic right wing, because a lot of these people who the Democrats trotted out there, those folks were kind of soft fascists. They won't look at themselves as that, but they were. You're busting unions, You're going after women because they want birth control. You want to privatize everything, implement austerity. You're fascists. Because the austerity is only going to lead to corporations having more power, and more power particularly over government, especially local and state government. That's a fascistic move. You may not like that, but it's the truth. You, though, looked at yourself as being more conservative than the moderates. So you went to war with the moderates. Well, fast forward now 20 years from that moment. And it's no longer dog whistling. See, you can't dog whistle anymore. Back in the 1980s, back in the 90s, you had to dog whistle about the naked corporate power structure which you were trying to build. I mean, that's what conservatism has come down to now. It's about corporations taking complete control over everything in the country. When you look at their, you know, they talk often about the greatest days being way back when. They ain't talking about the New Deal. They're talking about before the New Deal. They're talking about the pre-New Deal time period. And that time period was when corporations ruled everything. And the rhetoric that is being tossed about, especially in the alt-right, especially with your Ben Shapiro's, especially with a lot of these new fascist Christian followers that are starting to really bubble up from the beaten down masses, which, in a logical sense, what they're saying makes no sense because it's going to take power away from their families, their communities, their states. But these people are authoritarian personalities, and they are the ones speaking the clearest language of this new neoconservative language, which is fascistic. You've created a monster. It's always amazing to watch when a group of people who have worked their lives to create something which they themselves said would never happen. And then when it's staring them in the face, the exact image of what they've been working towards, they still can't accept it. They still can't accept it. You wanted to tear down government. This is what you guys were saying back in the 1980s. You wanted to tear down government, make it small. You wanted to buoy up, push up corporations while you talked a good game about small business. Oh, we're all for small business, don't you know? Small business, as Keith Olbermann once said on his show, what small business, what they're talking about is, and ladies and gentlemen, I'm serious when I tell you this. This actually is a thing. You may not know this, but it's a thing. When they're talking about small business, they're talking about corporations with less than 100 people who own them. It's called an S corporation. And a lot of your major billionaires today, especially the ones that hold private companies that aren't on the stock market, they qualify as a small business because there's less than one person, or there's less than 100 people owning the company. You talked about all this stuff. You were talking about imposing austerity. This goes even all the way back to Jimmy Carter, even Richard Nixon. You've been talking about putting austerity into this country during even time periods where austerity wasn't even necessary. You're going back to the 60s with Richard Nixon. And all so that you could stop the government from serving the people and fulfilling the people's needs, so corporations could come in and rob the people blind and serve them less. And now that you're seeing the poverty that is created, now that you're seeing the pain that is created, the sorrow, the hopelessness, the despair, And you're seeing there's a new class of people who talk somewhat like you, but with a viciousness, a hatred for everything around them. You try to act like you're anything different. You're nothing. You're no way different. You can tell me all you want that you don't hate black people. You can tell me all you want that you don't hate brown immigrants. You can tell me all you want that these things are not true for you. But the fact of the matter is, I remember how you all used to dog whistle. I remember what dog whistling was. It was literally meant to, on the one hand, signal to your white base that you hated brown people, that you hated black people, while also giving you plausible deniability of the fact that you hated those people. You've created a monster, because now your new generation, they ain't dog whistling. I go on to social media. I see what they say about black people, about brown people. People want to always talk about the national media likes to talk about, oh, Bernie bros, Bernie bros, Bernie bros. Yeah, well, let me ask you something. When was the last time you had a Bernie bro call somebody a gorilla who wasn't, by the way, getting paid for it? Maybe if the media, the national mainstream media, would actually get on their P's and Q's, they would start asking Republicans to denounce the disgusting behavior of these people who are online. And start with that person, Rand Paul, and his little supporters who speak the same language. You have a new generation. I have been told now for the last 10 years that because of the new generation was going to be different. The new generation is going to save us all. Please. I've seen who was raising the new generation. You've created a monster. And now we're going to have to deal with that monster. All of these neocons who are running to Joe Biden and to the Democrats, you have all created a monster, and now you're afraid of it. My father once told me something. He said to me, that he learned very early in his life. He grew up in segregation, Louisiana. Life was still segregated when he was born, and it didn't end until, technically, he was in his 20s. And in fact, it didn't end legalistically until he was in his 20s. He spent significant time of his teenage years in Philadelphia. So he got to see segregation on both ends. And what he told me about that segregation was that he didn't expect segregation to actually end for a couple of generations. And I go, why not? You know, they pass laws about it. And he goes, law's nothing. You got to deal with the children of those men and women who believed in segregation. And then you got to deal with the grandchildren of those men and women who believed in segregation. It doesn't just go away in one generation. It doesn't. You got to deal with the aftermath of that. Well, it's kind of ironic that my father said that, because segregation supposedly ended in the beginning of the 1960s. Donald Trump is literally talking about the positiveness of segregation as it exists today. And there's a lot of people who live where I used to live in small communities, who believe in segregation, because I grew up in a pretty segregated community. And it was a small town. The black people typically lived in one or two areas. Even where I live now, it's still relatively segregated. Black people tend to live en masse. There's a few people who don't, but in a very secluded area of the community. Or a couple of them, actually. What was it? 62? I'll just say 65 was when segregation supposedly ended. If 20 years is a generation, 85 is the first generation. Then the second generation would be 2005. What my father said is true. We're still dealing with the grandparent, the grandchildren of those people who actually believed in segregation. And these folks who are now running to the Democratic Party and talking about, you know, how it's for America, that we need to get together and blah, blah, blah. These people haven't rejected the fact that they were dog whistling all those years and the policies which they prescribed. They haven't rejected any of that. They've embraced it and said that we were actually correct. It's just this guy took it a little bit too far. To me, it sounds like what happened in Germany. And I know a lot of people make a lot of statements about Germany and what have you, but here it's actually quite interesting because Hitler took his philosophy, his ideas for concentration camps, which he said he got the idea for that from how the United States did Native Americans on reservations. But his philosophy, the Aryan philosophy and stuff, which was developed, you know, mostly in Europe, really got a boost by American contributors, meaning people who took the Aryan mythology, people who took the ideas of Aryanism and added so much to them. Well, Aryanism didn't go away with Hitler. Neither did the idea of white people being supreme go away with Hitler. What those folks just said was Hitler took it a little bit too far. I mean, we never really advocated for any of this except with the Native Americans and the blacks, but Hitler just took it a little bit too far. We would never, ever, ever we did that thing in the Philippines and Mexico and the United States, but we'll never do what Hitler did. I mean, he killed like 6 million people. We killed like 100 million Africans and about that much, that many Native Americans, but we'll never do what Hitler did because he attacked people who looked white. He went too far. We're not like that. We'll just kill black and brown people. That's us. It sounds an awful lot like these Republicans who are like, Donald Trump and his people are the problem. No, 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 no. You're the problem. All of you, including Colin Powell, who I once had so much respect for, including you, Colin Powell. To the Democratic Party, you're the problem. I don't care how much rainbow you put on. You guys realize, right? During imperialism, during colonialism, the white overseers of these colonial governments usually would pick chiefs within various tribes who would be loyal to their program. Okay? So, I don't care how much color you put on your neoliberal project. I don't care how many homosexuals that you put in your neoliberal project. It's still the same garbage. I don't care if you give me women in your neoliberal project. In slavery, there were women who owned people. There were women who went out and slaughtered Native Americans and loved doing it. There were women who supported the Ku Klux Klan. That means nothing to me. Nothing to me. One of the reasons I'm so critical of feminism. Nothing to me. It means nothing. All of you are the problem. You've created a monster, and instead of saying we need to slay this monster, you keep doubling down. But I'll tell you something else that the DNC brought to light for me. The DNC brought to light that for those folks in power in the DNC, for those folks who are absolutely the servants of big money capital, for those people who have been bought off by the Mike Bloombergs, by the Elon Musks, by the Bill Gates, by all of these folks, including the Jeff Bezos, for those folks who service them, do you know what fights they're fighting? They're not fighting about today's reality. They're not fighting about things that are necessary for today. They are fighting old fights. They're still fighting about the 1992 election. They're still fighting about Ronald Reagan. How do I know? Because I watched Rahm Emanuel. I watched Rahm Emanuel's couple of interviews after the fact, and he referenced Ronald Reagan. And the Democrats that became Reagan Republicans, or Reagan Democrats, whatever they wanted to call themselves back then, basically they were just racists. And people can tell me as many times as they want, oh no, it was because of Ronald Reagan and his slick tongue and how he talked and he... No. I'm sorry, guys. No. Okay? There were many issues. Ronald Reagan didn't even address them. He just sounded nice. But... he gaslighted you and dog whistled about race and about economics and race and the things that happened in the 60s, and you all fell on your bellies and worshiped the man. He was Donald Trump with a better speaking pattern and better mind, which isn't saying much. But the reference to trying to win back those people who 40 years ago left the Democratic Party by Rahm Emanuel tells me something about the mentality of the people in control of the Democratic Party. These people are fighting things that happened 2.5 to 4 decades ago. They're not even looking at what's happening now. And when I hear Rahm Emanuel get angry on CNN because there is a black woman, Lord help him if it was a black man, because the black man wouldn't have tolerated him acting as foolish as he acted that day. And I give a lot of respect to that black woman for not getting up and smacking his... Anyway, when he gets mad at this black woman for saying that the Democrats need to bring more substance because he's all about getting the W when it's going to be the substance that gets you the W, that tells me how empty the Democratic Party actually is and why there really needs to be a generational turnaround and why Pete Buttigieg is nothing, just like Beto O'Rourke is nothing, just like Klobuchar is nothing when it comes to what is actually necessary and needed today. These people aren't even thinking about the issues that are important to not only this generation, but this time period. They're talking about a W. I was talking to a friend at work who didn't pay attention to the DNC. Don't blame him. But I said to him, I go, look. Because he's an older guy, and he's talking about the same thing. Oh, well, we just need to get Trump out of there. We just need to get Trump out of there. And I'm like, no, we don't need to just get Trump out of there. We need to do what is right. I go, the problem with you is you're 60. And you are just trying to get to the end so you can retire. And that's great. I'm hoping you get to retire. But I'll be god darned if, in order for you to retire, you're going to destroy my future. And my niece, who is in her early 20s and is about to bring a child into the world, with a wonderful man, by the way, but I'll be god darned if you're going to destroy her life just so you can have an easy retirement. And he says to me, well, you know, I'm not really advocating that, but if we don't get Trump out of there, and I go, well, why did you get Trump in the first place? Why'd you get Trump in the first place? Oh, because of Russia. Man, forget Russia. Why was it so close? Why was it so close? Okay, Russia hacked the election. Let's say fine. They did. Okay, fine. They had to, like, shift 100,000 votes to give him the election. I don't even think it was that much. Why was it so close? And, you know, he had nothing to come back on. So we're still dealing with structures and philosophies that were brought into existence in the 1970s. I encourage everybody, read the book Goliath by Matt Stoller. I encourage everybody to read that book because he lays it out. He tells you, this is this philosophy. This is how old it is, how it connects to Melanism, how it connects to, there's another one that I'm forgetting. It's not Henry Ford. He wrote a very influential book way back when. But he talks about the beginning of this philosophy. And ladies and gentlemen, if you really want to start getting down and breaking this thing down, you got to understand where it came from. The monsters that are created right now aren't going to go away until this economy is healed. And I'm glad to see that Robert Reich, who used to be one of these neoliberal believers, real, like, true believers, I'm glad to see that he's kind of realized the errors of his ways and he's changed his direction. But it may be too late to undo some of the damage that he helped to cause. As am I happy to see that Ralph Nader, who did have a mingled understanding of the role of a citizen back in the 1970s and 1960s, and placed them too heavily in the consumerist model and mode of the society, I'm glad he has reformed himself. Now, he did very early. He did very early. But unfortunately, it was a little bit late. So, these monsters ain't going away until we fix the problems of this society. My biggest concern is that we aren't on the path to doing that. In fact, we're on the path to making it worse. Because the elite think it's in their best interest to allow the society to fall further and further and further into a decrepit condition, to allow poverty to reign supreme so they could have as much money as they could hold. But again, as I keep telling friends of mine, we are in one of those moments. And I, you know, you could see this last year. We are in one of those moments where things are so contrasting. Bezos is making more money than he ever made. Musk is making more money than he ever made. Maybe even Gates. The stock market is just absolutely flying at a time period when over 20 million people are fearing eviction and foreclosure. Poverty is running rampant. People who never had to go in line for food, they're in line, they're in soup lines, they're in bread lines, they're in food lines, and that doesn't even count what's happening with police violence, which it makes me sometimes wonder, and, you know, how much of police violence, how much of the police violence could be caused by stress? Now, yes, I'm not excusing them shooting black people. Lord knows I ain't excusing them shooting somebody 7 times in the back. But the question I do have is, how much stress are these cops under? See, because unlike some other people, and I'm not talking about black folks here, by the way, I'm talking about these white boys who run around saying what they say about black folks. I don't view these people as non-human. I don't view them as non-human, so I don't treat them as non-human. I could still view them in a sympathetic fashion and treat them in such a way and yet say what you did was wrong. That's maturity. At the same time, I'm condemning the heck out of these people who are online calling black people thugs and gangsters and the rest. To hell with them devils. Because that's what they are to me. And yeah, by the way, in case you don't know, according to the ancients, yeah, humans can absolutely be devils. you don't have to be non-human to be a devil. You can be human form and still be a devil. And so they're devils to me. That stated, they are the monsters that are created from all of that dog whistling. I mean, because here's the funny thing is, guys, and this is amazing. I don't know if any of you have ever thought about this. From a metaphysical standpoint, what is a dog whistle? Dr. King approached the civil rights movement as a spiritual fight. Dr. King approached the civil rights movement as a spiritual fight. This is why there were hundreds of pastors who were steeped in the old way that black folks used to view Christianity. Not this new white theological prosperity gospel evangelical manner which black people have focused their churches on now. It's garbage, truthfully. It's just garbage. But the old way that black folks used to craft their church services and what have you was very deeply spiritual and very deeply, the word I like to use is embalming when it came to spiritual juices. That was what enabled us to far outlast the punishment which the society could give us. Well, that spiritual strength which we had built up from our time in segregation and enslavement, we then used to go to spiritual war with the demons that were holding the keys and the locks to segregation. And though we lost a lot of good men and women doing it, we were pretty darn successful. Well, in the 1970s, when they started doing this dog whistling, well, technically the late 60s, nobody ever questioned what were they calling. I heard one commentator say, when referencing Donald Trump in his speech on for the RNC, he said, oh, that's some red meat for the base. Whoa. Okay. So, do you feed red meat to humans? No, you feed red meat to beasts. You feed red meat to things that are non-human, that do not act human. You feed red meat to predators. So what are they telling me about the base of Donald Trump? These people look human, but are they telling me that they're predators? Are they telling me that they're beasts? Are they telling me that they have a subhuman way of looking at the world? Because you don't give red meat to humans. Now, some could say, well, wait a minute. Remember that movie Alive? Yeah, well, that's a starving situation where you were eating for survival. But most people who aren't in a survival instance don't need red meat. Oh, well, it's just a metaphor, is it? Because I'm on the other side of that metaphor, and I don't like where it's going. But let's get back to the dog whistling. Because again, the fight was spiritual. And there were a lot of entities, a lot of spiritual evilness that got toppled with Dr. King's movement of nonviolence. Well, if you were reliant on that evil, on that spiritual energy, for your perceived power, let's say, if you were reliant on that throne for your perceived power, well, then you would create a way to start bringing that energy back together, to start amassing that energy. And thus, well, how would you do it? You would have to speak it into existence. Isn't that what the Bible says? You would have to speak it into existence. Well, you can't just come out and say, as the one guy said, nigger, nigger, nigger. You can't just say that. So if you want to speak it into existence, you got to cover it up with something. So you dog whistle. Because a dog whistle is an instrument. But what is that instrument used for? It is used to call a dog, and sooner or later that dog comes home. They have been calling back into existence this energy, which was pervasive, not only back in the civil rights era, but way back in the pre-New Deal era. These folks have been dog whistling to bring this energy back together. You're talking about a fascistic energy that existed back in the 1890s and started to finally get dismantled in the 1930s. You're talking about a deeply, deeply, deeply racist, a deeply racialized energy that encouraged white folks, and particularly white men, to not only brutalize those who did not look like them, but kill them at their whimsy. It's amazing to me that nobody has really made the connection between those who play these very violent, violent, violent games, these first shooter games, and the right wing. And not only just the right wing, but white supremacists. It's amazing to me, because I see it. What is equally amazing is that nobody else has ever saw the idea of the dog whistle being a verbal instrument for calling into existence something that is evil and destructive and decapitating. You don't have to dog whistle anymore. Everybody knows what you're talking about. But now what I'm seeing is a new generation of people who have the same hate grimacing their face, distorting their whole personality. And whereas Dr. King would talk about that being a sign of pain, I now talk about it not only as a sign of pain, but as a mark of bedevilment. Quick story. Then I'm going to end this because I really only intended this to be 20 minutes, but hey, what do you want? I went to school with a kid who was definitely different than any other kid that I was around. He was a white kid. And when I say he was white. He had that very bleach blonde looking hair. And he used to pick on everybody. He was very unique. And for most of the time that I was in school, he picked on me. But periodically, he would treat me good. Like if somebody else would come and start picking on me, periodically, he would stick up for me, which was somewhat confusing to me. And then I remember when we were in seventh grade, he offered, when I was trying to help we were doing some fundraiser, and I wanted to come in and help, but I lived way out in the middle of nowhere. My parents didn't drive, so he offered, asked his mother if she would come out and pick me up, and, you know, I went and helped sort things, and we made a lot of money for this charity. And he was decent for like a week, and then he went back to being a complete jerk. As we got older in high school, it became pretty clear that he wasn't going to graduate with us. And I remember trying to talk him into staying in school and, you know, being as good as he could be in the situation that he was in. And then one day we were talking about other possibilities, and he was telling me that he wanted to go and join the military. And I was like, oh yeah, that would be really good for you because, you know, you thrive in structure. You have strong capabilities that the military would bring out of you, yada, yada, yada. But he wasn't old enough to go to the military, so he was trying to find something in between. And I forgot. He actually reminded me years later what I told him that he should do, which he then followed up and did, which he liked, and then he went into the service. I saw him on leave a couple of times, and, you know, he was still his crazy, dumb self. But he seemed to kind of get over that need to want to really tear down people for his own betterment. Then I think I was like 27, 28. Again, I had seen him a couple of times. Him and I had talked and things were good with him and things were good with me and it was just whatever. But then I started seeing him online on Facebook. And he was saying things, and I was like, dude, what are you talking about? Like, he would make some statements about Obama, and, you know, they were clearly racist things. And I'm like, dude, what are you talking about? That's completely nonsense, blah, 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 blah. And we would sometimes get into little arguments about things. But we were still cordial. He told me to read a couple of books. At the time, I was reading other books, and I was dealing with life and didn't have time to read them. Many of those books, by the way, I have gotten, and a couple of them I've read. But these are big books. These are books that are huge, particularly in the alt-right. I saw his mother about a year and a half after, about 2 years maybe, after I'd noticed all these comments that he was making, and his mother told me that he had really changed. She goes, I don't know what happened to him. He's not the same kid that I once knew. And she repeated this to me a couple of years later before I moved out of the town, where I saw her and I'm like, yo, how's he doing? Because I was still pretty friendly with him, even though, you know, I saw a lot of crazy stuff he was saying online, and I was just like, dude, you gotta... I mean, the kid, to be fair, was always egotistical. He was always full of himself. And as once when he left the military, I don't know if he quit. I think I'm pretty confident he just finally retired. And then he went to school, got I think he's a lawyer of some sort. He went to school, polished his mind. He was always full of himself, and he just became even more full of himself after that. I mean, that was just crazy to me. But his mother told me that he had just become bitter and angry, and she was shocked. Now, I knew his younger brother, and his younger brother had always been a card-carrying, out-the-box racist. Always. But Big Brother didn't seem as out-the-box carrier as he was. So, it took a few years, and it took really the election of Donald Trump for me to really see this kid for who he was. This kid who I had grown up with, who was, for all intents and purposes, a decent but troubled guy. He was a full-blown racist who had disguised his racism very well. The reason I tell you this story, ladies and gentlemen, is because a lot of what's happening has been there. It's been there. See, the dog whistles now have brought the dog home. And all of you who are shocked by this, who are like, oh my God, I can't believe this is happening. You use a dog whistle. Sooner or later, the dog's going to appear. Don't you know? It's not Donald Trump. It's not. It is not Donald Trump. It's never been Donald Trump. He's just what has been spit out. And I'll tell you, I see a couple of these young kids, 22, 23, 24, who are about to get on the scene when it comes to conservative Republican politics. And a few of them kind of make me frightened. Because they ain't dog whistling. They don't care to dog whistle. They're talking very openly about racism. They're talking very openly about economics. And they got their eye purely on power. And these people unequivocally are authoritarian personalities. Thank you very much for listening. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, you can always reach out to me. I am your brother, Brian Mayer Dees. See you on the next one.
To the wars that are fought in places where their business interest runs. On the radio, talk shows, and the TV, you hear one thing again and again. How the USA stands for freedom, and we come to the aid of a friend. But who are the ones that we call our friends? These governments killing their own. Or the people who finally can't take anymore, and they pick up a gun or a brick or a stone.